I wasn't quite clear what Clifford meant by his last point of if you attract new people, you don't want them to be too interested in a particular style of doing things. I mean, could you expand a bit on that and give an example of what you mean?
Yeah, it's you know, it's not easy to do because it would be easier to do if I didn't mind being personal. To give you an example, I mean, you don't want to make a condition of membership that somebody has to like eating curries or liking Bob Dylan music, do you? Give an example. Well, I can give those examples with impunity because I like doing those two things myself. So, you know, you can tell I'm not getting at anyone. But there are other examples. I mean, for example, I've attended branch socials, not in London, but I mean, not in this branch, in another branch, which have been advertised. Not just for members. In other words, there's been a public meeting and it's been announced. You know, there is a social. If you're interested in the party, please come to it and you'll have an informal chat with us and that sort of thing. And the members who've actually attended the social, in my view at least, haven't necessarily conducted themselves in the way which would be best likely to result in those people who turned up as non-members ending up joining us. You know, that's my own view. Obviously, we could argue about it. If you'd been there, you might argue otherwise. But I just get the feeling that sometimes it's easy for members, because for obvious reasons, members tend to get on quite well with one another in some cases, occasionally. And I heard there was one once, in fact, a member actually got on well with another member somewhere. I didn't. But the problem about it, if you do, is that, of course, people who turn up out of the blue, out of the cold, it can feel a bit left out because they can feel, oh, you know, this bunch of mates. I mean, I'll give you another example. I've gone to meetings which have been held in London in a pub, where you're meeting in the room upstairs in the pub and you're drinking in the bar downstairs beforehand, and visitors are coming into the meeting. Now, I don't say you should necessarily rush up to someone and say, you know, you've come for our meeting, do you know who we are, and all that sort of nonsense. But you know, they might appreciate it if somebody sort of was a bit friendly and said, oh, you know, there's a meeting up there. And what sometimes happens, to my observation, is that members have congregated in a tight clutch in the corner and sort of practically whispered amongst themselves about the latest party intrigue or what have you. And somebody who's wandered along for the first time ever can be made at times to feel they're intruding on some bloody club or something, you know, that people all know one another and so on. Now, I'm not saying we should be phony about it. I'm not saying we should sort of go out of our way to create some, affected impression that we're very outgoing, or, you know, it would just come across stupidly and fall flat on its face. All I'm saying is that we should at least bear in mind the danger of allowing things which are not to do with socialism to impose upon those which are. Members, at the moment, the movement is still small to the point where certain tastes within the working class will happen to predominate for purely accidental reasons in some cases within the party at a given moment. You know, there's such a size that there'll be a certain taste, whether it is indeed in some of these superficial things like food or music, or more serious things such as overall personality, you know, the kind of person that you are, will obviously predominate at a given moment in the party. And all I'm saying is that where it predominates, I mean, obviously in a different branch within that party, you're dealing with an even smaller group. And obviously the smaller the group, the more problem you have, or the more danger you have, of one type predominating that group. You know, if you've got five people in a group and four of them are all of a certain type, I don't mean anything perverse or sinister by a certain type, I just mean you have different character types. And if they are, whether it's a certain age, let's say, you know, you may have, out of five people in the group, four of them who are particularly young or particularly old. And all I'm saying is that in such circumstances, when people come along to that group for its meetings, you might need to make a special effort not to make that person feel that because they're not particularly young or particularly old, or because they're not particularly trendy or particularly old-fashioned, or whatever else, rather eight other labels you pick out of the bag, that therefore they feel somehow they better not come back again because they don't quite fit in with that. And it's a hard thing, because obviously we can only be ourselves ultimately, but we do sometimes have to make a bit of an effort to say to somebody, look, you know, this person's not really as young as us or as old as us or whatever, but we're going to go out of our way to make them feel quite welcome, quite at home here anyway.
Yes, comrade. Sorry. You, comrade, yes. I'm sorry I don't know your name.
If one goes around the party as a speaker, going to different branches, I think it's important to observe this that we're talking about, that even though one's a member and has been a member for a long time, in my case, I still feel a bit awkward in some branches simply because I've turned up and I'm not dead certain who all the members are, and nobody comes across the information and says, lots of asking who's a member here, and if I were an outsider, I should find a bit, as it is, I've got a job to do and I'm going to want to do it. But I think some members have got the sort of disdain of capitalist etiquette or something like that. That may be the way they have it in their mind. Therefore, they're not going to do things like shaking hands and saying, welcome, pleased to see you. We don't need all that bullshit. You know, we all know what we've got to do. The trouble is, we haven't substituted anything in its place in some cases, and it does feel a bit frosty.
Can I just add to that? I think there is a case to be made for, for being impersonal in some comments. I mean, whereas on the one hand, I agree that it's important for branches to present a friendly enough front so that people who turn up don't feel totally embarrassed and left out and never come again. So you need to be a bit friendly, obviously. But there is also a case in another context for being very impersonal, because I'm saying this from my own experience. Before I was in the party, if I went to, and I didn't go to many meetings at all before I was in the party, but you know, one gets a general feeling that if you went to a meeting, even now, if you were to go to some meeting and you did feel a little bit inhibited by the general situation, you're on your own, you felt a bit shy or what have you, one way of doing it is to be very impersonal. For people who are at all shy, as I know I can be going into a meeting on my own, that in a sense is the easiest way out. Just let them lose themselves, be impersonal about it. I mean, if you do draw great attention to somebody, it may be that the person will be more put off than ever by that. So I think it's very difficult. What you need, in fact, is a balance between that and anonymity, which you allow people to retain. And at the same time, if somebody does actually give you a sign that they actually want to have a bit of a chat, then, of course, we should do so in a friendly manner.
Yes, go with me. Yes,
do. They've got 20 members and you get about 4 or 5 termite branch meetings, and you get them minutes being read to about 3 comrades. Don't you think that they would be better off if they merge with another branch, or even 3 branches merge together? Even though the distances for travelling would be long, it would be far better and there would be more activity if those branches merged.
Anyone wants to comment on what Comrade Smith said? You want to comment?
I have a
your
comment
hour.
To me, not a,
your hour,
the last...
I thought Keith was going to come in on that.
Yes, okay. You want to comment on Comrade Smith's speech, Comrade?
If nobody else is going to comment on what Bob said, I will, in fact.
Yeah.
I thought somebody else wanted to. I'll comment on it briefly to save mucking about. I, my own personal view, obviously, I don't want to keep answering questions necessarily, but as you've asked me, my own personal view is no, I don't think it would create more activity if they merged. I think it would create less. For a simple reason that at the moment you've got, a branch of 20 and only 5 turn up. A few miles away you've got a branch of 50 and 20 turn up. Now what you're saying is that you'd get more activity if they joined together. I think it's the opposite, in fact. If they joined together, you'd have a branch of, you have a branch of 70, and I don't think you'd even get 5 plus 20 turning up. You'd probably still get the same 20 turning up. I think possibly, you know, in other words, by merging, you may end up, but it's a bit like combining two chemicals, you might end up with less substance because the rest would have turned to ephemera, would have gone into a gaseous state, you know, if it's not too bad an analogy. And you'll be end with the actual sort of concrete matter you're left up with in the end of the day might be even less than you started off with in one sense. The other argument against merging in many cases, I mean, I'm not saying there is a case for mergers, but another point against merging is that at least you've got a presence in different places. Now, I know, I'm sure John Howell, who yesterday was making a point in favour of concentration, might disagree with me here, because although he conceded you'd still have presence in other areas, I'm really, in a sense, putting the anti-concentration argument. I'm saying that there's quite a lot to be said for having presence in as many places as possible, so that even if you've got a really quiet or a really small branch somewhere, at least it is there on the map. At least you can say, well, we've got 20 branches, and you can draw a map of England and put dots on the map and say, we've got something there. Whereas if you start merging them for the sake of having a sort of more compact sort of thing, you're going to end up with just 3 or 4 dots on the map, and I don't think that the attendance of those branches will equal A plus B. It will probably equal A plus B minus C.
Do you want to expand on that, Corey?
Well, I think on that now, the two branches are separate, remain separate, but they give attention to the propaganda.
To
propaganda. That's about the proposition.
But on the question of Gonsha affairs, you know, you are organising a Gonsha meeting, you elect the chairman and so on, and very desirable that you should be reasonably competent, and at least you should have the full support of the meeting. And I'll go along with that. And I've known cases where this is, you know, not been the case, and you've had a very rough and slipshod meeting. And also on the fact of the importance of containing all the relevant things you need to do on that evening. Here again, it boils down to personalities. You'll get certain personalities go along with a box, determined to carry a resolution, and they'll use every device under the sun to keep the discussion going to the extent of boredom, and therefore other business cannot be dealt with. And you know, this is something that's quite wrong and shouldn't happen. And the UK boils down to not allowing strong personalities to override a branch meeting. But it is a problem, in my experience, containing all that needs to be read in a branch, BC reports and so on, all that needs to be dealt with. And in a small branch in particular, I suppose, this could be a special problem. And I think maybe I'm putting more into the need be, because maybe most branches do find ways round of overcoming this problem and dealing with all the relevant matter in a methodical manner. But in my experience, it has and can be a problem. But not to say they haven't overcome it. But if you're not careful, it can lead to boredom in the branch. And I know for a fact, not a member of my branch, but a nearby branch, where I spoke to a member the other day who left that branch because he said it became so boring that I gave it up. But I would like to return if it became brighter.
Comrade from before.
Yes, before I make the point I was after, I really must protest that this sideswipe at my plea yesterday for more centralisation. I certainly never suggested that there should be less branches. Obviously, I'm talking about a tendency, something that the branches that in various parts of the country could, as a way of effectively contributing to the work of the party rather than just spitting into the wind in their own little corner. That's that aside. But the other thing, again, I'm sorry to appear to criticise his work, because I do agree with so much that he said today, but there's no point in just sort of going patting him on the back all the time. So I'm going to really heartily disagree with this suggestion he made last, that it's a good thing to arrange seating such as we have it here. We have a strongly democratic aim, and this arrangement that we have here is very undemocratic. There's a very simple reason, that you can't see any faces. The majority of us can see faces other than those of our leaders on the front. Now, all right, look, I don't wish to impute any wrong intentions to the people at the front, but ipso facto, they become leaders simply by virtue of the fact that the majority of us have to focus, have no alternative to focus. We don't know what the nuances of thought are those of, I don't know what Harry's thinking now.
I don't know what I'm thinking
guess.
Myself.
I'm glad I'm asleep. The thing is, we all know each other. So this has at least obnoxious effect when we do know each other, yeah. Because we hear a voice, we know that sort of thing, so I can go to sleep now, or whatever. But if we're talking about the very important point that Cliff Brown, I mean, I agree heartily with the importance he made on how you treat people when they come in. They've got to be encouraged to participate, and not discouraged. And so I'm not suggesting that you grab them and shake them warmly by the hand and sit them in between two persons of the opposite sex or anything like that. Or the same sex, whichever case happens to be. But no, I would strongly, and having discussed this with new members and non-members in our branch, at Guildford branch, we've had some success too in gaining new members, and we certainly find that that is an attractive setup for new members. There's got to be more than one row, but if you arrange them in a horseshoe or circle or something, the seating has to be in more than one row. and I don't want to go on about this too long, but it is very important. Is it something you can just do and it works for you instead of working against you?
I would like to, if I can, yeah. On the point from the back about fitting things in, very important point, because I've attended quite a few different branches business meetings, and they do vary a lot. I'd say, taking a couple of examples, in Glasgow you have very they deal with things very quickly. A lot of time other members who've been there know what I'm talking about. It's and with almost military efficiency, a point is raised and it's dealt in a very clipped sort of fashion. And what that means is that the meeting, after an hour or two, they've dealt with all kinds of things. In Islington, you may be surprised to hear that quite a few members of Islington like to sort of take their time and chew over things, talk about things at slightly greater length than in Glasgow. And as a result, sometimes it has been known for us to have problems, sort of. Problems. Yeah, it makes the meeting more interesting. It sometimes means we've had problems fitting everything in, fitting all the night's business in. Very often, in fact, we've had problems of that kind. And they're not easy to get round, you know. I mean, it's not necessarily the answer to simply have a ban on speaking for more than a minute, because that will make the meeting unpleasant for other reasons. So it is a real serious problem. And part of the answer, I think, lies in very good chairmanship and good secretaryship, so that the secretary can actually, at the start of the evening, say to the branch, right, tonight's agenda is... give you a summary of how many pieces of correspondence, how many reports, and so on. And then you share out the time. That's one approach. You say, well, look, if we're going to deal with this agenda tonight, it basically is half an hour for each main item or whatever, and you ration the time. That's one sort of thing, possibility to bear in mind. There is a comparison here, which I think is quite useful for me to mention, with the Marxist theory of revolutionary change, in fact, because just as in relation to this revolution society, Marx on the one hand points to the forces of production in society growing until it reaches a stage where those forces of production are prevented from developing further by the old relationships of production. There's a conflict between the relations and the forces of production, and therefore those old relations of production, those old institutions, if you like, have to be smashed in order that those productive forces can be liberated. You have exactly the same thing going on in the party and in branches in particular, where there's a growth in membership, there's a growth in that sense in the political forces of the branch, but the old channels, the old, if you like, the social relationships in the branch, in other words, the old agendas, the old procedures or what have you, just like the relationships of capitalism, begin to form a block. And this is what I meant earlier on when I said that growth itself is actually impeded in some cases by this. In other words, people come along, but because the old procedures are cumbersome, they actually go away and don't join. So it means that the growth forces, if you like, are actually killed by the old institutions. So what you have to do then is start to formulate procedures within a branch which facilitate growth, which are flexible, which actually encourage rather than putting a block on growth. And this, as I say, there is a fair comparison there. On this other point from John, I mean, firstly, I'll just apologise if I misunderstood him or misrepresented him in relation to his arguments about concentrated activity. I apologise for that. On the question of seating, we've experimented to some extent in Islington with seating arrangements, to some extent. The branch hasn't paid a great deal of attention to it. But the idea of seeing faces... But firstly, I must, if I do nothing else, immediately discount this statement, this reference to Comrade... Ahmed and myself being leaders. I mean, I'm sure it's only meant lightheartedly, but it's a serious thing to say, and it's a very untrue thing to say, and I'm sure everybody here recognises that. But I don't think it's necessary. I mean, I agree with John that it's worth thinking about how you lay out a room. Obviously it is. I do agree very strongly with that. I wouldn't necessarily run along with the idea that a circle or a horseshoe is necessarily suitable. It might be in certain situations. You have to take it as it comes, I suppose, to some extent. I can see everybody's face now. And it doesn't mean I know what they're thinking. I don't think that seeing people's faces is necessarily what it's all about, although I do sympathise with the view, because I know if I can see the back of someone's neck, it gets a bit annoying at times, and if they're speaking, you like to see them. It's fair enough. It's not always that easy, though. And do bear in mind one thing. I've been asked to address the meeting for a fairly substantial length of time, and I've prepared notes to do that. And I think it's a fair point for me to throw in, because in other words, that is, if there is one, that's the justification for the seating arrangement of this room. If somebody's been asked to prepare a specific statement to the rest of us, then I think it's logical to some extent that you lay out the room so that they are facing him. When we finish and we're having all-round discussion, I suppose then it would be more justified than ever to actually break up the rows and get it more into a circle. But there, of course, we've only got half an hour left for this section anyway, so I've got time to do that.
Comment from this here.
I speak as a member of a group rather than a branch, though I hope this is the pre-branch stage. So I was listening with envy to the earlier talk of small branches of 20 members, five of whom actually turn up to meetings. We'd like to be in that position. Now, I found a lot that was very positive and useful in what Clifford said in his talk that can be used by a group in a scaled-down sort of way as part of the attempt to reach the stage of being the village. It did occur to me, though, that if there's anything in addition that Clifford could tell us about, or a central organiser from his experiences, or any members who are now members of branches that have recently achieved that status from the group, with any additional ideas that they have, I'd be very interested to hear.
Would comment on that comment?
No, I'll leave that.
Is there any comment?
The first thing I think that I agree with what the club has said, but the most important thing that I think has got to be said over and over again in this party is that we need to grow. Indeed, if we had a slogan, it should be grow.
Yeah.
That's definite. And there's one thing that frightened me with the statement. He said, was talking about a branch, and correct me if I'm wrong, don't be frightened of that, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was talking about 50 to 100 people. Now I think that that one of the best ways for expansion is that when a branch gets to 15 or 20, and anything extra should be pushed out into the other places, to the other areas, it is an indisputable fact that in the big cities now, people are living miles out, way out, and we need to be building there. Another thing I think that every branch should have is a policy for expansion over and above its particular own backyard. I think that's a very important thing. There should be said, that must be planned. Where are we going new? What are we selling new? Now, we found, since we've left Manchester, that going to new areas, not only is it atomic, but we realise the opportunities that have been missed. That's why I want to. Point two is another. I want to make 2 points. Come along, mate, so I might as well be 2 pence. Right? Point two is this, and I think this is another important thing. We've got to ask ourselves very critically, how is it that when our members come in, people join the party, they get involved in activity, and then for some reason or other, they suddenly cease? Why is this so? I think that's something that we need to look at. It may be as a result of the branch, but it's certainly a problem. If we look around this room today, we find that quite a lot of people have come along a distance, but what have we got? 280 members in London. You know, now this is the sort of thing we want to be asking ourselves, why it's happening and what should we bloody well be doing about. This is the nitty gritty to me. Growth is the key. That's what we've got to be on.
Comrade Eddie, your turn to follow.
The point that Comrade Preston made just now links up with what I wanted to say when earlier on there was a suggestion that branches should concentrate their efforts, and I would take his point to mean that would be unwise, and in fact, if anything, we should spread our efforts out further. I would propose not the one or the other, but specifically in the London area, because I do think the London situation in the party is at the present time different from elsewhere. I would not say concentration or dispersal, but rationalisation. A practical point which must always be borne in mind, and hasn't enough been borne in mind in the past, is that a party branch should be a political unit related, therefore, to political units. There are, of course, other factors which we mustn't and don't need to ignore. Transport connections aren't necessarily coincident with political areas. Imagine, for example, the time will be when we have a Hillingdon branch. Hillingdon is one of the 32 London boroughs. But transport-wise, there's nothing going from one end of Hillingdon to the other, and it's a very complex area. So it's not the only factor we consider, but it's one that we should be our starting point, a political unit. But taking the 32 London boroughs, our spread, as far as existing branches is concerned, is not. It may have historical reasons, and it may have reasons that birds of a feather flock together, people of similar tastes or lifestyles and so on, find that congenial. And that, again, is a factor which I wouldn't want to totally ignore, because since a branch should be a working unit, if like-feeling people do get together and get on with each other and do something because of it, well, so be it. Of course, that's only a luxury at the moment in London. If you're in Bristol or Manchester, or Glasgow, you have what you've got, because there's no alternative. In London we have a luxury, but we should use that luxury, I think, a little more rationally. Now, in the London borough, we've got 32 London boroughs. So it's one branch, what, to five London boroughs. Yet there is one London borough where we have two branches in. Is that because both are so busy, so active, that, you know, they've got two different existences? No. There would be a strong case, I think, for somebody, the party, saying to them, look, there is a case for rationalisation, for merger, or whatever it is. Have two branches in one London borough doesn't seem a wise use of resource, such as there is, propaganda effect. So I think one of the things that should be put up at a party conference would be for the actual location of branches to be considered by these three factors which should be taken into reckoning, but not given equal importance. Similar types of people, transport access, but above all, the fact that we should be a working political unit within aiming for effect in a particular political unit, because that's what we have to deal with, the political units that there are. And when they change the political units, we'll have to readjust. So when they redraw the power boundaries or whatever it is, well, we have to readjust our organisation too.
Good to expand on that. Comrade.
Yes, Comrade. Starting off with Hillingdon, of course, it would be ideal, because that's our window on the world with Heathrow Airport. But what I wanted to discuss was the upper and lower limits, the optimum upper and lower limits of a branch. I think these points were raised. For example, where you have a large active branch close to a small branch, which, for example, I can think of one where there's a quorum of about five members, and one of which is the only person who can get there every week. The others, or shift work, or perhaps sickness or other things, can only maintain an irregular presence, but nevertheless, that presence is maintained. Now, it could be argued that one branch will amalgamate with another. Well, I agree entirely with Flint about this. A presence has to be maintained. Now, it is an important thing that it should occur that a branch should choose itself a doubled barrel of name, because it does mean that you have, in at election times and other times, when you're able to participate, you can use the local media of both areas. You have an entree as being a branch, X and Y branch. It means that you can get into local papers and publicise in X and in Y borough. Not all branches do this systematically. It needs to be done. It gives you that leverage. When it comes to large branch and a small branch together, one needs to look, first of all, to be effective, a branch has to have a critical mass of people that can consistently carry out certain things. Lots of our branches are just bumping along, maintaining a sort of presence, but not being able to do much at the moment. Now, where there is a large branch, this whole problem will question, well, what is the optimum outside membership, obviously, in any particular area, are always special reasons why these things occur, but there must be a sort of average, optimum, maximum membership of a branch, beyond which efficiency falls off, and it's possible that some of those other members could help out a branch to form a critical mass there, so that they can become much more active. With regard to Wally's point about people, in a sense, getting stultified and not quite knowing what to do next, one thing which isn't discussed often enough in the party is the theory of the development of political consciousness. Most party members operate with a certain theory of what we are doing in propaganda and publicity. And the theory which most members hold doesn't correspond with the reality to the communications of ideas. What tends to happen is that you can get people to join the party, become enthusiastic, do all the usual things, branch men become engaged in these things. It finds that he doesn't get, he's not successful. Now, if people hold a rudimentary theory about changing people, how people's ideas change, and what is the nature of the communications media and things they're doing, they either become highly demoralized and leave individually, or the branch, I know a branch becomes so demoralized with things, the branch gets fed up and disintegrates, or if that branch has a deeper insight, a different theory about the nature of how consciousness develops, it doesn't become demoralized at all. It still ferments its opinions, it still stays there, waiting for opportunities to develop. So it is important for much more to be said about how we view the development of political consciousness and the question of the use of the media. I won't go into that now. It might interest, incidentally, on the point that Conrad here raised, it might interest Cliff to know that when I first joined the party in the late 40s, one of the first things that was thrust into my hand was a factotum published by, I think, by the Tavistock Institute about group dynamics. And a rather bewildered new member was sort of wondering why this sociological treatise was thrust upon one, and there were lots of them in party head office been given around. And of course, this question, although you're quite right about the point that you made about this particular meeting, it is very important that members and branches are aware of so structuring the seating arrangements to a way which is suitable for what you're trying to achieve at any given time. There's a lot of academic work on this, and there's a lot of highly popular expositions of these things, as you're probably well aware of. And this is something that probably could
No, we only have a few minutes left.
Just like to again address the comments that Laurie made about people dropping off, in the sense that it's a fundamental issue. It goes in with other comments which I'm going to make about the treatment of non-members. It seems to me that the problem we had in our branch, and I can obviously not a member of this party and don't know the branch that well, but I would imagine these are typical sort of problems. And what you find is, I think this is a relevant thing to talking about, because I would imagine most of the people here are fairly active members. And one of the commitments of that activity, which active members tend to forget, is the need not to just accept the implications of their activity without transmitting that through the whole branch. In other words, the philosophy tends to be, you know, if you want something done, it's easier to do it yourself rather than to bother sort of telling other people that it's going on, etc., etc. And it seems that, you know, in our branch, we sort of major items of activity that we're going through that other branch members just didn't know about. You may just take the complacent view that, well, that's their problem, they should come to the branch meetings and they should know that these things happen. We also have a responsibility to them not to isolate them, not to make them feel that they're detached from the major thrust of the activity. That seems to be a very major point. And that also ties in with your treatment of non-members, because I think that, you know, when people, that number of people who are on the periphery of the party, sort of on a regular basis, which probably outnumbers the actual membership of the party, that we should patch us to get those people involved in activity as well, suggest to them that they come out to light posts and suggest to them that they come out leisurely, and also that we should make organisational meetings, the meetings that those people are attending, to seem dynamic enough that it represents the party in a very lively and active.
I want to speak on this, but I'd like to point out that I'm speaking as the party's central organiser, also a member of the party since the propaganda committee, since 1976, and the reason I make those points is because if anyone wants to follow up some of these things in a practical way, if the propaganda committee and the central organiser, they can come. That's what those officers are there for. They're to serve the membership.
Do come and do.
And therefore, on the point of Convalina's race from Bristol, Bristol Group have written to me about this, and there is a detailed reply coming to them. But I would tie into what was said there, something Comrade Preston raised, which is quite right. Look at the size of the London membership, look at the least active and the least recruiting branches in London, and ask yourself why those very branches aren't here this weekend to try and educate themselves on growing. Because I think the branches which aren't doing too well, it's not something to be ashamed of, that we should get involved. And it's pitiful that here you've got a meeting in London
to discuss the growth of the party, and you've got whole branches in a party which don't even think of turning up. I think it's a terrible reflection on the state of the London membership. A few particular points that Comrade Sackler made in his very interesting remarks, I think, were, first of all, he talks about planning meetings. Could I suggest to all members of branches present, change the name of meetings from business meetings to planning meetings. Call them planning meetings. People come in. What workers going on now? Business is something that not a lot of workers are involved in, except for the producing profit sense. And therefore, planning is what it's about. It sounds more dynamic, it is more dynamic. But also, don't make too much of a distinction between planning meetings and propaganda meetings. You know, there's actually been a case where people have gone along to one branch in London, and we're not naming any names here today, and they go along to a branch in London, and that person is told, it's a business meeting tonight. Well, as far as I'm concerned, if somebody comes into the branch, then it's a non-member meeting tonight. And at some way, whether it's a few people going down to the bar or whether it's somebody arranging to meet them on another occasion, you're talking to them. So we should call them planning meetings. Outdoor meetings. We're not making enough use of those. They cost us nothing. They're legally possible to hold. And if they're prevented from being held by legal means, you can get publicity out of that as well. Outdoor meetings is something we can do. I'll give a very good example. Southwest London branch recently came towards a decision that next summer they'd like to run outdoor meetings on Clapham Common. They wrote to the local council. The local council had to consider the idea. The next thing was that we read about it in the London Evening Standard. Lambeth Council is having to make a decision about whether there are going to be outdoor meetings on Clapham Common. We started something happening. We have actually, as a party, began to improve the democratic process, and the propaganda committee is currently making plans to make sure that there are speakers to cover Clapham Common every Sunday, as well as Hyde Park every Sunday, when next summer's speaking really gets underway. Local leaflet, and may I say to members in areas, get in touch with the propaganda committee, we'll help you run the outdoor meetings. We'll help you run them by providing speakers with loud voices, because that's something we've got no shortage of in this party, and we'll help you also, even down to the last, very difficult practicality of how to build the platform. We've got members in the party of the propaganda committee we're in close contact with who know about building platforms, and you don't want to just be standing on a crate. Local leaflets, Comrade Chairman. Comrade Slapper touched on it. Branches should be saying what are the issues which are topical in our area. I know Lancaster branch recently, we're going to have a go at this. Taking a look at some of the issues which local people are talking about and putting a socialist slant on them. Very important indeed. And again, contact either me, the central organiser, if you want to get to the right people in the committees in the party, or write to the new pamphlets committee. You can get somewhere. Even if you're an isolated member, if you want to produce a few hundred local leaflets, if it's necessary, we can even print them for you down here and send them up by post, but we can do it. Also, chairmanship was ready. One simple thing I would suggest, I suggested it to a few members of Islington branch. There's a book on chairmanship. It wasn't written by a party member, but then there have been books written by party members which are quite useful. And that is Citrine's Labour Chairmanship. And if anyone wants to get hold of a copy of that book, they can come and see me about it, read it, study it. Democracy is something you want to study about. And I'd say, next year, I'd like to see Islington branch and other branches too, running classes on chairmanship. Yes. Because chairmanship is one of the most important things in making sure that a meeting is run effectively and efficiently. And the final thing I want to say, and I say it from the point of view of the Propaganda Committee, Comrade Chairman, is this. When Comrade Slapper says we've got to run serious talks, he's absolutely right. If people are going to come into our meetings, what we want to present them with is someone who's going to have done their homework on what is going to be given to them. We want somebody, doesn't have to be an expert in capitalist terms, far from it, but someone who can provide the authority, in the best sense of the term, of knowing their subject, because if the party doesn't win the confidence of people, then we're nowhere. And I would concur with the comments that Comrade Slapper made, that if we're running meetings about the life of Jenny Marks, and running meetings about the peasants in Russia between 1599 and 1622, how the bloody hell are we supposed to expect the working class to take us seriously in 1984?
Finally, if I could say this, answer this point about breakaway groups, because it was raised earlier by one or two comrades, by Comrade Preston and Bradley, and now you've mentioned it again. My own personal view on this, and I suspect, well, I know, in fact, the view probably of a number of members in Islington, is that if there is a level at which a branch should start to siphon off some of its members into other areas, we certainly haven't reached it. We would know if we had reached it. The reason we know we haven't reached it is because, although at the moment Islington has a membership of 62 on its books, somewhere between a half and a third of those members turn up regularly on a weekly basis. Now, that's not a very good proportion. It's not nearly as bad as sometimes one comes across, but, I mean, a half to a third it can obviously be improved on. But what that means is that, you know, you're not just picturing a sort of room of 60 people sitting around a table necessarily. You're talking more about possibly 20 or 30. And out of those 20 or 30, as I explained earlier, most of those 20 or 30 people are officers. They're doing a lot of very specific work. As soon as you start to split things up and siphon people off, you're seriously running the risk of destroying the long-term effects of some really good concentrated work in an area. So I don't say there won't be a point at which things start to split up and siphon off. Certainly, we cover a fairly wide area. Our members live over not just Islington, but other areas of North London, covering a fairly wide area. As we grow, what I suspect will happen is that those Islington members who live in the northern, North Islington, in the direction of Haringey and so on, will start to form a new movement there. People who tend to live in the north or to the west of Islington will do likewise. But it certainly hasn't been reached yet. So if there is an optimum point, I'd say it's one we haven't quite reached.